Our guest today is a leader in the world of design with a track record of shaping digital experiences across industries. From spearheading the creative direction for the Chase brand and winning a Cannes Lion to leading design at the Huffington Post and driving the iHeartRadio mobile app to 24 million downloads, his impact has been felt by millions. As an advocate for the customer, he has pioneered approaches at organizations like JPMorgan Chase, ServiceNow, and Bakkt, bridging the gaps between product, brand, and technology. He has a unique ability to inspire teams, challenge assumptions, and elevate the strategic role of design in driving business outcomes. With over two decades of experience in UX and product design, he has consistently pushed boundaries and transformed legacy systems into innovative, engaging experiences. So today it's my pleasure to welcome Josh Klinner, the Chief Design Officer at Bakkt, to the Same Logic podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Same Logic, smart intercept surveys that product teams love. Josh, so great to have you on the show. Welcome to the Same Logic podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So to start, I'd love if you could give or listeners some perspective into your vantage point previously overseeing design at Bakkt. Specifically, what challenges and opportunities were you focused on when it came on to driving the adoption of the platform?
Yeah, thanks. I started at this design career in the editorial space and over time transitioned to the product design world. And joining Bakkt was an interesting opportunity to help build a product, build a culture, and build a team at the same time. So I was very excited to sort of dive into that, especially in an emerging market, being able to start with almost a clean slate, if you will. And what was exciting about that is, you know, we started with a foundation of this idea of allowing people to convert anything to everything, you know, whether that be crypto or rewards points or your Starbucks stars. And over time, the more we talked to customers, we learned that specifically people wanted to understand what they could do with crypto, what they could do with Bitcoin. Because I think up to that point, you know, generally speaking, this is going back a few years now at this point, but you know, for the crypto curious, they were just trying to understand what you can do with crypto as opposed to buying and holding.
When it comes on to like your entire story as well, your entire story is pretty fascinating. Talk to us about like your experience coming into the industry. Where were you before Bakkt and like before that? And take us all the way back.
Sure. Let's go back to the old days, the old dinosaur days of editorial. I came out of design in New York City. This is going back into the early 1990s, I think, where I was a part of a studio which was focused on editorial design. And we were doing a lot of editorial projects, which was at that time redesigning, reimagining, relaunching various editorial products. Anything from working with PC World to Entertainment Weekly to InStyle magazine. And it was an amazing time, especially if you think of some of the business publications, Bloomberg and Business Week at the time, where we were telling these complicated stories. And it sort of just always gave me a love of storytelling and sort of an editorial voice. And it was this sort of interesting time to, as I went and became the creative director of Billboard, I really started chapter number two of my career, which was leading design teams and product-focused teams inside brands. So Billboard was a transition for me where we were focused on the editorial product, but also working in video and events and merchandise and licensing. So really overseeing the entire brand. And it was there that I really started to really dig into the world of product design and the digital space, and then went to go join Clear Channel, where we launched a new entity called iHeartRadio. Now, it was, believe it or not, 15 years ago now. We just recently celebrated the 15th anniversary, which was kind of amazing to think of this sort of band of outsiders inside this large terrestrial radio company that was focused on digital. And this was the early days of the iPhone, where we were launching a new app, which at the time only had 15 radio stations across the country and eventually grew to 350 plus customer radio and all those features that you expect to have. It was an amazing time. It was the very early days of iPhone. We were designing iHeartRadio for BlackBerry and Android, and even going back into the in-dash in-car applications for iHeartRadio. So it was an amazing early time in app design. And that ultimately led me to AOL Mobile, where eventually I started to oversee all of the Huffington Post from a design point of view, and working closely with Arianna Huffington and the technology team and the editorial team, where we were really in an era of expansion, expanding from the traditional desktop web experience to mobile, and creating a live video streaming product called HuffPost Live and an editorial long-form journalism product called Huffington. And it was really, Huffington Magazine really became the first of its kind, a weekly publication for iPad that was a mix of web content and editorial content written for the magazine. And then from there, I went to go work for a small financial startup in the Valley called JP Morgan Chase. This was around the time where I moved from New York City to San Francisco and really got embedded in the tech scene in San Francisco and had a fun run there, where I built up a team and focused largely on Chase.com, the consumer experience from the public point of view, and then sort of the design system, the design language, how it worked throughout the rest of the Chase Secure websites and dipping into things like Chase Private Client and JP Morgan. And after that, I was really ready to scratch the itch of a startup. And I was very, very, very close to finally going to do a startup in the Valley. But a comrade of mine called me up and talked to me about this world of enterprise design and designing for enterprise environments with a small rocket ship called ServiceNow. And I did join him there and had a good quick run. And then finally, my old head of digital from Chase called and asked me to join him on an adventure of this startup that was in the crypto and loyalty space, and that was backed. So I joined him on that adventure, which was a good 2-year run. And believe it or not, I'm about to return to ServiceNow in a sort of new role, but rejoining my old studio team there, where we work directly with customers to help them solve their big challenges.
Oh, wow.
So it's been quite an adventure.
Yeah, that's like a pretty awesome adventure. So like over the last like 15, 20 years, both as a UX practitioner and a UX leader, how has your perspective on research methodologies evolved over that time? And what specifically excites you about that today?
You know, I think it's been an interesting journey for sure. You know, in the early days of iHeartRadio, users didn't know how to use the iPhone. So you weren't really doing user testing in a traditional sense based on the methodologies of today. Yes, you could understand their hopes and dreams and what they look to accomplish over a 24-hour listening span, but the way that we test and the way that we get feedback for a more mature platform like many of the apps today is a lot different. You know, we in the early days, you know, we're really trying to mimic and work closely with the platform. So we wanted, you know, the BlackBerry radio experience to feel similar to the BlackBerry music experience, and same with Apple and same with Android. At the time, you wanted to sort of go with what was as familiar as possible because it was such a new platform and such a new experience. I think now, expectations have changed and people's familiarity with the platforms has evolved. So, you know, take the enterprise environment that we are in now, you have people coming to the workforce who are used to consumer grade experiences. So they expect that in their enterprise work experience. So, you know, this whole experience has evolved over the years and it's been exciting to see it grow and mature over time. I think at the end of the day, it really starts with customer or a user's desires and, you know, hopes and dreams, if you will. Like how can you help them accomplish their tasks in a low friction way?
When it comes on to research methodologies, what methodologies do you find consistently over or undervalued across organizations? And how does that vary by the company lifecycle stages?
I think depending on what environment you're in, like for instance, at Chase, we had a number of research teams across a number of groups, whether that's the market research team in the consumer bank or the UX research team inside the digital team. Each team is looking kind of for different triggers or different bits of background to help them drive their products. So the market research that was done inside the consumer bank might be driving to sort of a different point of view versus how someone might use the Chase.com website in a very specific customer journey. So it's always kind of interesting learning the different perspectives and seeing how we as digital designers can incorporate all of that into the customer journey, because a user just doesn't pop onto Chase.com and decide to buy. They have a much broader journey where they might see a billboard, they might see an ad, they might go into a bank and then, or a retail branch, and then start their customer journey. So what's kind of fun and fascinating is taking that, those different approaches, but also looking at sort of the generative world of research and the user testing world of research. And I think sometimes we dive very quickly into the usability side of research versus some of that more generative research, because I think generally people tend to make assumptions, right? And I think in the early days of iHeartRadio, it was really interesting for us to, you know, spend time with users at home, commuting, and in work, so that we can better understand how and when they're using their iPhones. At the time, you know, we had issues around connectivity while people were commuting on the subway. So we had to add in different layers of buffering so people wouldn't necessarily drop when they were underground. But that that conflicted with our business rules about, you know, quote unquote, streaming versus terrestrial. There are very different digital rules around that. So, you know, we were bridging sort of new worlds by using the user research to sort of drive better experiences. I think when it came to back, we were dealing with what we called a crypto curious customer. And, you know, really understanding where they were coming from was critical to designing the new experiences, not going based off of like a very crisp crypto familiar or crypto comfortable user. We were starting with people who were new to crypto. So doing that generative research where we sat with people in their living rooms, in their kitchens, and we talked about how they thought about this new form of digital currency was really critical to some of the experiences that we would design later. And then obviously do all the user testing that you would experience, but, or, you know, the user testing that you would traditionally do with an experience, but it really started with that generative.
When it comes on to understanding end-to-end journeys, where do you see the biggest knowledge gaps today in understanding those journeys? What proven models help teams trace like complete stories?
In my personal experience, I find the biggest gap or the biggest challenge right now is time. Spending time with customers, it takes a while. And we are all pressured for time. We want to show quick results, quick wins. And I can't tell you how valuable it is getting that those nuggets of information from customers, getting those real stories that really drive the way we can design these experiences. Because if you don't have those stories, you end up designing for, I've heard called HIPPO, highly paid personal opinions. You know, those executives that come to you and say, well, my wife did this, or my daughter did this, can you just fix it for that? You're not looking at the actual user and the actual experience. So if people can bake time into their process for that early stage generative research, I think that that is sort of a critical area where people can start on a stronger footing.
Your answer to that last question was kind of ties into this one as well, because like I'm kind of curious as well, the approach that we're kind of taking now, we're using analytics more and more, or culture is becoming more analytics driven. So I'm kind of wondering, you know, how do companies kind of don't lose empathy in the process of like designing for that core user. And I kind of see like some companies kind of coming off course off that as well. How do you, what ways could they course correct that whole thing that's happening?
I think I heard Edward Tufte say 86% of statistics are misleading. So I always take some of the analytics with a grain of salt. I actually thoroughly enjoy any time a website gives me the opportunity to give feedback, because you can tell based on the questions that they're asking what they're trying to solve for. They're actually not asking the questions that are relevant to me. They're the questions that are relevant to their business. And they're missing, I find that they're missing an opportunity to really understand that user. I think businesses tend to ask the questions that they can more easily solve, rather than really dig at the real human needs that customers have. And it might be because they're trying to support existing business models, or they don't want to necessarily rock the boat too much. But the more you can talk to a user and more get that generative research, I think the more you are able to understand. And ultimately, it becomes fodder for making more revolutionary change versus evolutionary change.
I love that. When it comes down to highly regulated spaces like the financial services industry, what principles guide your teams to, like move fast, and still learn very quickly? And not even financial services, it could be advice across any tightly controlled industry, I guess.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of good barriers put in place to protect the user. And you have to appreciate some of those. Like, you have to understand those. I remember once at Chase, I spent days arguing with the legal team about what constitutes one click away on a tablet, where you don't click, you tap, you scroll, you swipe. Sometimes the regulations don't keep up with modern experiences. So I think it's up to us as designers and design leaders to sometimes interpret and try to take the intent of the regulations and mix that with, again, a good user experience. So, case in point, we often design with accessibility in mind. We want as many users to be able to access the site as possible. But sometimes, because of development cycles or product cycles, we can't get to a certain level of accessibility. And unfortunately, that leaves behind a number of users, whether it's folks that have low sight or, have issues with movement or motion or color contrast. It leaves behind a lot of users. I don't think anyone intends that for to happen. But, we would get these incredible letters from users who couldn't read our website because of the color contrast they were using, or the motion that was being used on the site. Motion is a beautiful tool to use, and I love putting in haptics and motion into making a beautiful design. But if that leaves out a certain segment of users, can you call that a great design? I question that. And it's because of the regulations around accessibility that we push for more inclusiveness.
Also, like we have like so much data now. How has greater data abundance and analytics impacted the role of qual versus quant confirmation of ideas?
Yeah, I mean, it's a long-standing argument. I think you have to be informed by data, but to have the data just drive the conversation, I think you're missing out some good value that we as humans bring to telling stories. Otherwise, we can just let ChatGPT design and write and do the whole thing, and we can call it a day. I think we need to interpret, and we need to use our creativity to take the data and interpret it. Again, it's if you ask certain questions, you will get certain results. Sometimes you have to go a little bit wider and learn a little bit more than a 1 to 5 star rating will allow. And again, because you want to value your user's time. So it's great. By no means, like, am I saying don't test? You know, having a survey at the end of a flow to say, was this a good experience, is incredibly useful, but it doesn't negate understanding where the users are coming from up front in a more generative way versus the more data-driven way. You can test into almost any answer you want to get.
I love that. When it comes on to, you know, like ideas that you kind of wished you could implement, if you had like an unlimited budget, what bold research initiative would you drive to reinvent to help, you know, us understand or target users better or target markets better?
There was one test environment that we were trying to do at around the time that we were launching a new product for Chase. And it was in the credit card space, and it was for kind of a high net worth user. So maybe a little bit selfishly, this falls into the generative research, but there was an opportunity at the Sundance Film Festival where we were able to get a large group of this audience together. And we were really excited to be able to spend time with them upfront, understanding their hopes, dreams, and desires for this new product, because I think that would have really informed the direction and the brand values for this product. And unfortunately, it sort of got a little bit lost in the shuffle, and we weren't able to do it. But it would have been an incredible opportunity to take this moment in time, you know, at the Sundance Film Festival, which is an amazing experience, and speak to these users one-on-one, two-on-one in small settings to really drive a vision for a product, both from a brand perspective and from a user experience. And I think we let the details get in the way, and we missed that opportunity to do that. And we didn't have the insights going in that we could have had to really drive a sticky experience. And for better or for worse, I think a year and a half later after the product launched, we sort of came back to wanting and wishing we had that information to help create that holistic experience.
I think that kind of ties into my next question, which is my last question, actually. I ask everyone who comes on the show this question. And the question is, what's one weakness that you've turned into your strength?
It's a good question. I would say, you know, probably improving communication skills. I think for anyone that comes into design, you tend to come in from different spaces. And for me, it was that sort of heads down creative side. And as you grew in your career, as you continue in your career, you know, one of the things is like picking up your head and communicating effectively as a leader to, you know, leadership teams and to your peers and to your team below you is really important. And, you know, I think that is requires, you know, learning how to listen as well as communicate out, you know, working with your teams about getting feedback. You don't have to do this all overnight, but over time, incrementally, you know, stopping and thinking about how you communicate, you know, whether that's through an email or through a Slack message, but like pausing and reflecting how you communicate in a keynote presentation. This sort of iteration that you need to do, I think ultimately allows you to reflect on sort of where you're coming from and, you know, hopefully ideally empower your team to communicate more effectively. Because the more we're talking, I think the better we're working, and it sort of reduces silos and allows for, you know, just really honest communication across the board.
Josh, this was fantastic. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us on the Same Logic Podcast. Can't wait to share this episode with our audience.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. It's been fun.